A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready?
What's going on here?
Earth's resistance is futile.
This, indeed you are, Paul,
is...
in my hand, Paul!
Fan Effect.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Fan Effect, sponsored by Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters, the best place to see a movie in the state of Utah, and they prove it time and time again, including the movie we're going to talk about today, the big one to kick off the summer movie season, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Hi, my name's Andy Farnsworth. I'm with KSL News Radio, KSL Television, and joining me today is my co-host Kellyanne Halverson. Welcome back, Kellyanne.
Hi. I'm so glad we're together again.
Yes, we've had some issues with the podcasting studios to where it's difficult to get more than two people at a time. But we're making it happen, and we're welcoming back our friend from, what is your blog called now, Natalie?
Nats.
You changed it.
Nats Nerd Knowledge.
Nats Nerd Knowledge. And Nat is here.
Did you change it again?
No, is that. But now I have, I'm very active on TikTok and Instagram. So go on there with a lot of fun Marvel and Disney memes from me. Yeah.
And we're really glad to have Natalie with us because right before we were going to record this, really close to the release of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, why don't you tell the story really quick, Nat?
I was out for a lovely jog on a spring morning when it was a lovely 55 degrees. I was crossing in front of a parking lot exit when a man in his BMW hit me because the sun was in his eyes and he didn't see me. So I had a bunch of broken bones and got some teeth knocked out, so I apologize for my little lisp. Because I got some fake
I bet nobody
teeth in.
Even would have noticed.
I have to focus very hard. I can't say safety. Safety's the one I can't say right. But no, I am so happy to be alive. And that. Thank you guys for pushing this so we could talk about Guardians. You're my favorite people to talk about movies with. So.
Well, we're glad to have you. And so we said, you know, we'll wait if we need to so we can get the best quality discussion possible. And, you know, it wasn't your fault you got hit by the car. So how could we penalize you for that?
Oh, thank you guys. If it was my fault, then you guys would be like, no.
Yeah, no, we have low tolerance for people when it's their own fault. But this time.
I just want to know if you can say rocket, because that's going to be important today.
Oh, yeah. Rocket. No, it's fine. Just no S's.
Okay, we're good then.
Star-Lord. That's the problem.
Star-Lord.
Star-Lord.
All right. So the big movie to kick off the year, the summer movie season, which, by the way, used to start around Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. And then about 20 years ago, Spider-Man comes out on May 3rd, 2002. Makes so much money that they're like, wait a minute, I guess we could release movies sooner than Memorial Day and it will still make money. Mm-hmm. The thought process was generally if kids were in school, they couldn't make as much money as they could once Memorial Day generally was the end of the school year. So 20 years ago, we get that. Now Marvel has essentially owned that first weekend in May ever since, almost exclusively.
Basically, yeah.
And definitely since Iron Man. So now we have Guardians Volume 3 kicking off the 2023 summer movie season. And boy, there's a lot. The final chapter in the trilogy by James Gunn. Mm-hmm. They took a group in 2014's original Guardians that, I mean, even I'm a diehard comics person and I didn't know that much about them.
Yeah.
In fact, I didn't care that much about them initially because, you know, I was into the mainstream superheroes, you know, Captain America, Thor, all the ones that I was hoping to see on screen. So then Guardians comes out, and then it looks like it's kind of goofy, and then it looks like it's, I don't know what.
But. Well, because it didn't have those expectations of years of movies already made, they were able to create that love right from the first movie, and I think that's why it's been such a success.
No, it was a good move because it brought in people who weren't nerds like me to, you know, because honestly, when it first came out, it was like, I mean, I liked all the movies, other than maybe Incredible Hulk, it was like my least favorite of the series because I just didn't. I wasn't invested in them. I was really invested in what they were trying to build up towards Avengers at the moment,
not realizing
how they would all come together.
But it was also, there were such awkward characters. Like when I saw the previews, I was like, a tree and a raccoon and a bunch of aliens. Because it was kind of, besides Thor, it was like kind of the first series outside of Earth. And for me, I was like, am I going to get into this? But, you know, James has done such a great job at making them so great and lovable and relatable all at the same time.
And for me, Chris Pratt was in it, so I was fine.
You're right.
Parks and Rec.
Which is funny because he wasn't ripped until about this role. He was just sort of dumpy Andy on Parks and Rec. And then between this and he got two or three roles all in a row. This, the first Jurassic World, which was the next year. And then I want to see he got into one other action movie. I can't remember what. But at any rate, then all of a sudden he goes from, you know, dumpy Andy to like totally ripped and jacked, you know, Star-Lord and Owen. I forget what Owen's name last name was. But
they actually gave him the option of not beefing up like the rest of the Avengers. He's like, I'm not standing next to Chris Evans looking like this. So he actually did like P90X and started running and got in shape.
You can read some of his interviews online of what he was allowed to eat while he was getting in shape. And it was like he got to eat like two lettuce leaves with a piece of cottage cheese on it a day. Well, he was doing crazy workouts.
Well, then they even mentioned in Parks and Rec, because in the series he goes off to London and everything. And when he's visited by one of his friends, he's like, he was all ripped and everything. What did you stop doing? He's like, I just stopped drinking beer. How much beer were you drinking?
Yeah, that was a hilarious way to explain away his physical transformation.
We're very grateful he did make that transformation for these films.
And for auditioning. Apparently he's auditioned for all the Marvel characters. And
yeah, that came out during the publicity for Volume 3 that we found out that he kept getting turned down for all the different roles. And so he's like, I guess I'm never going to be part of the Marvel Universe.
And now he's like a favorite.
Yay.
And he's... Oh, I won't spoil anything.
Yeah, you can spoil. The movie's been out for three weeks.
Somehow, and I'm excited to see how he's going to come back.
All right, so let's dive in then on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Let's hear just a little clip from the trailer.
My sacred mission is to create the perfect society.
He didn't want to make things perfect. He just hated things the way they are.
It's hard to do trailers on the radio, as I've learned over the years.
To fight beside my friends.
Incinerate them.
But
we have to have great music for these. That's like half the point of the movies.
Right. So we're going to get into that because I was less than impressed with the soundtrack on Volume 3, personally. I mean, I liked that they included some music that I knew. I'm not a 1970s music fan like James Gunn apparently is.
I am.
He's probably older than me, but I don't know. So the first one, he at least picked hits that I knew. The second one, he didn't pick very many that I knew, but a couple of them, you know, Brandy, You're a Fine Girl, the main theme, that one kind of grew on me. But for this third one, like I think I only recognized a couple of songs, including Beastie Boys. I like that. Although it was funny.
I thought
Sabotage would have been a perfect.
It was pretty cool. I loved it.
Star Trek already claimed Sabotage in the first Star Trek.
Everyone's claimed Sabotage.
That is true. I love
every
that
movie
scene,
uses Sabotage. That's kind of what I was half expecting. But you know, No Sleep Till Brooklyn was kind of clever, too.
But he also used a lot of 80s and 90s. Like, you have Florence and the Machine as like the grand finale song. And
yeah. Actually, I think that
was... It was progressing just like the storyline.
The song when it opened was the... I don't remember what it was. They were using a sort of a melancholy version of a song that I recognized. Anyway, all right. So, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 picks up after Avengers Endgame. So, Volumes 1 and 2 take place before Infinity War and Endgame. Volume 3 takes place. I think they've said the exact time frame was a couple, 2 or 3 years, maybe not that much. At any point,
it was a bit after the Christmas special, which was awesome.
Obviously, the Christmas special. I forgot to add that. But you got to, you start off with, you start off with a little bit of a flashback to a raccoons in a cage, or at least we assume they're raccoons. They sure look like raccoons. Bunch of little baby raccoons, and then the ominous hand reaching in to grab one, and the one raccoon looks scared. And the next thing you know, we see the Guardians as they are today, minus Gamora, living on the planet Nowhere, the head of the Celestial, and Peter Quill's a drunk. Nebula's sort of trying to hold the team together. She's kind of like the de facto co-leader at this point.
It's like her great story arc, I think.
Yeah, she got some good treatment, I think, overall from where she started to where she finished. And goodness gracious.
And a super cool arm.
Karen Gillan. Oh, yeah. It's almost impossible to believe that the same girl who looks like Ruby Roundhouse in the Jumanji movies looks like Nebula. In fact, I think I told my daughter when we were watching it, and she's like, what? Yes,
for me,
it
she's
is.
Always the Doctor's companion.
Oh, and see, I never watched Doctor Who enough to know that. But yes, I'm sure for a huge segment
and
of
like
fandom.
In both ways, she has so much strength in both roles, even though they're so different than each other. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Right. In fact, I was watching another interview of hers where she... She scheduled couples therapy during filming.
Yeah, and her makeup.
And she still had, for some of the days, she still had her full head makeup. When so it's this Zoom call with her and her doctor, and I don't know, it's her boyfriend or her husband. But they're all in it, and she's in, like, Nebula head makeup.
Yeah, but she's gotten so much praise for her performance in this movie. And I agree. I think she did a fabulous job as her last hurrah as Nebula, for sure.
Versatility, strength, comedy. Even in the trailer, there's just seeing a lot of the comedy come out from her. Like, it's fantastic.
And yeah. She has a great shade of black in her eyes.
Yes,
even
yes.
Though they were replaced as a method of torture.
Don't look at me like that.
All right, so the Guardians are sitting there. Suddenly, they're randomly attacked by a gold guy who they can barely fight off. They do, and
so
only problem
him.
Is that Rocket suffers a pretty critical injury.
Mm-hmm.
The gold guy gets away. They don't know anything about him, but they also know that they can't seem to fix Rocket because, as it turns out, there's some technology around his heart that prevents him to help him. So after doing some investigating, they find out that it's from this genetic corporation, Og Corp or something like that. OG Corp. But they have to figure out how to go find the technology to be able to fix him. It's a good thing they have Nebula, who can plug things into her head like Data on Star Trek.
Yep.
To be able to interpret stuff, or who knows what would have happened if she hadn't left Thanos. We get, there's the side joke of Cosmo being called a bad dog by Kraglin that then becomes like a running plot as a side story. They break into the goop place to get the station that's grown out of matter, which if you think about it, it's like living tissue.
But Nathan Fillion's in it, so it's fine.
Right, and that's where we get to meet Nathan Fillion's character. He was in all three Guardians, by the way. Did you know that, right?
What? Yeah, he's in all three of them.
Is he like aliens and you can't tell who he is in the other ones?
Yeah, Michael Rosenbaum is also...
He does a voice in number two, I think.
Okay, that makes me so happy because he's one of my favorite people because of Firefly and Serenity. And then he does a lot of DC comic stuff. So that makes me very happy he's in the Marvel Universe as well.
Yes, yeah. and he's funny in this role too. You know, the way he has to deal with the dumb boss's nephew that he doesn't even bother to hide how much he's insulting him. They get in. They find out that that the information they need has been stolen. This starts to point them in the direction of a guy named the High Evolutionary.
Very creepy face.
Who becomes the big villain of the movie. And then interspersed with all this is Rocket's experiences while he's in a coma. I don't know if these are flashbacks or if they're just showing us as flashbacks. I never quite could tell in both viewings of the movie.
I think because it's the last movie and there's, again, it's kind of like Endgame where there's such a huge cast. I think what James Gunn did so well in this movie is that they put a focus more than defeating a bad guy. It's about saving a friend and it's about saving Rocket. So I love having those flashbacks and we get to learn more about Rocket because he's one character we just don't know much about, and you just fall in love with him so much more in this movie.
And well, I definitely interpret it as he's having those flashbacks as he's in the coma phase or thinking about his life before then. So
that's what it felt like to me. But, you know, in the comics, it doesn't necessarily have to be done as a narrative structure like that. And that's why I didn't know for sure one way or the other. I didn't know if you guys had read anywhere if it said, but it felt like it was him flashing back and everything. And of course, you find out that he was given – we never find out exactly what the High Evolutionary did to him. Did he put a different brain in or did he do some kind of experiment? Did he inject something? We don't know what happened. We do see that he has a shaved top of his head when he comes back from surgery. He can now talk and he's starting to be smart. My gosh, how heartbreaking is the hurts? When he says his first word is hurts.
It's so sad. But the High Evolutionary in the comics, like he just alters DNA and genetics. So I'm sure that's what he did with Rocket.
But we definitely have some brain and mechanical.
Oh, no, because there's some other stuff.
He's
also like
too.
Sid from Toy Story as far as how animals go.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And
that's such a good connection there.
Kellyanne's a huge animal lover, and I am too.
Yeah.
But
well, and that,
that
was one of
really
the things that I heard from a lot of people. By the way, I guess I will just note it in the description.
We're 2 weeks out.
I know, but just so people don't, for some reason, think we're spoiling all the way through here. But we'll make sure that that's written in the description on the online portion too. But so we find out that Rocket has known the High Evolutionary for a long time. We never knew his origin, although in all three movies he insisted he's not a raccoon, though he's obviously a raccoon.
Or
a trash panda, as that was the funniest line in Guardians Volume 2. I laughed so hard at that the first time I saw it. Is that bad? It's so
much
bad.
Worse.
we find out that he's kind of cellmates with Chumley, with the walrus. I'm going to call him Chumley, but that was That was an old cartoon.
It was Teefs.
Tennessee Tuxedo and Chumley the Walrus.
You can call me Teefs.
Teefs. You're
but
Teefs.
It's Teefs, and you got Floor because she's lying on the floor, the spider bunny.
Bunny.
Which, by the way, if you can make a sympathetic character out of a spider bunny, then you've done a good job.
With the big scary thing over her mouth.
Oh my gosh,
and face.
It's like the baby head with Sid in Toy Story.
You love him anyway.
Right, but it's still like. I mean, it doesn't have a mouth.
So,
it's got like a Mad Max face going on. So, and then Lila, was that the other one?
Yeah, Lila. She's in the comics.
Mm-hmm. And Lila, she was voiced by...
She's the otter creature.
Yes, but her voice was... I was searching through the whole movie to find out who voiced...
I will
not
look at
who
IMDb.
Voiced her, but I saw the name in the credits and I was like, wait, which one was Lila? And so, but at any rate, great job. Very sympathetic. An otter with no arms, just the robotic arms. They have some fun together. You have no idea what it's building towards, so that when it does happen, you're heartbroken by these four mutant animals that you've never met before, and suddenly you're so sad that they're gone. Because anytime you kill something that has a sympathetic voice and a heart of gold, you can't help, no matter what they look like.
And they have so much hope, even though they're in terrible situations.
Sky,
and,
they're going to go to the new world.
Yeah, they believe everything that the High Evolutionary is telling them about themselves.
They have friends for the first
time. No, actually, he never told them. I don't think he ever told them they were going to the new world. He just said he was making them for the new world. And that's a big distinction because Rocket assumed the same thing till he found out otherwise. We find out that Rocket... you know, as we go along, we learn after he solves the problem with the evolutionary scale that he's trying to do for the animals.
Which is uber creepy, by the way, but also really cool graphics.
Yeah. Oh, and just to answer your question, Andy, it's
Linda Cardellini. Yes. That was Hawkeye's wife in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, Velda and Scooby-Doo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes.
So, and so I was like, Linda Cardellini was this? But she was the voice of Lila. And actually, another cameo, which we'll get to later, is Judy Greer, who played Scott Lang's wife. And, she voiced what is his name? The pig.
The pig? War Pig.
War Pig, yes.
Yeah.
That was Judy Greer. So,
I love her.
We have, what we come to find out is that the reason that High Evolutionary is obsessed with Rocket is because he's the only one who's ever managed to evolve beyond just being able to learn what they programmed. He was able to understand things beyond. And plus, you know, for somebody like the High Evolutionary, the ego hit of one of his creations understanding something better than him. He looked like he came in drunk, actually.
Oh, he was not happy.
Furious.
Well, and they do it in such a beautiful way because, he's this little baby raccoon. You see him progress as, like, toddler to a childlike one. And he's just this genius little kid
animal. And he keeps scavenging parts you don't know what for.
Oh, I'm naive.
And he just wants to be loved.
He just wants to be loved and have his friends in a happy place. Oh,
yeah.
My brother will get that joke.
So much sympathy. So much sympathy.
Did it go over our
heads? Yeah, it went right over your heads. It's all right. back on the main story, they managed to get out of, they managed to escape with what they thought was the information they needed. They get away from the organic lab. Then they find out they don't have the piece they need. So now they got to go actually find the High Evolutionary himself in order to steal the information from one of his recorders, who I thought also could have been played by Titus Burgess if they had decided to cast him in that role.
Amen.
In fact, at any rate, he seemed like Titus Burgess anyway.
And you forgot to mention that that piece is missing because the High Evolutionary wants to build a new society. So he needs this new piece.
Oh, yeah. No, we'll get to that because that's what brings us to Counter-Earth, the place that looks just like Earth, only with the High Evolutionary in this as the Statue of Liberty.
And really weird human animal people.
Well, they're called they're either called Animen or
Inhumans.
Or, well, they're not Inhumans. Inhumans are the Kree. But they're either
called?
Animen or there's like
creepy.
Another.
They're called Creepy.
They're like that too. But so these are the result of what Rocket fixed is now you have all these evolved animals living essentially on an Earth like ours with the same problems, obviously, as Earth like ours. And, a lot of things happen. I mean, we don't have to recap every single thing, but they get into the ship. They have a plan. They just need to get the data out of the recorder. And all this is just to save Rocket. But at the same time, High Evolutionary wants Rocket. Oh, by the way. What's the society called again? The gold people. I forget their name all of a sudden now that I'm talking about
it. Oh, with Adam and everything, as they're going after
the Sovereign.
Mm-hmm. Sovereign.
So the Sovereign are looking to get Rocket also, but only because they want to get the credit for getting Rocket. So Adam Warlock comes back in.
The
Evolutionary launches his ship, blows up the planet because it isn't what he wanted. Yeah, guy with the eyebrows.
And that's what's kind of cool is he wanted to create this utopian society, and of course it was totally messed up because people are not perfect. And I think that was something super interesting that we can talk a little deeper about that as well at some point. But
it wasn't working. He'd gone as far as to create that Earth, and then he blew it up because he's just going to start over. And you see this throughout. Like, he doesn't care. He doesn't care about the things that he's doing. He just wants to complete the task. Mm-hmm. And whatever is in the process is in the process. It's not important to him at all. So
very creepy.
But all the rest of us, very important to us. And at any rate, they all finally end up on the same spaceship. Despite a series of misadventures.
Eventually,
then the Nowherehead, which we didn't know could be piloted like a ship.
Apparently
can. flies up, and then we commence with the big final space battle that eventually...
You have to have a final space battle.
Of course.
Come on. This is the final of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Of course. And
it has to be different.
And the Guardians win, and none of the Guardians die, which kind of we all thought at least one of them was going to die, but none of them did, which... Of course, I think makes almost everybody happy.
I was waiting. Yeah.
I was emotionally prepared for Rocket or Star-Lord to die, or Drax. Those are my three guesses.
Well,
I thought Drax.
The real life comes in. You knew that Dave Bautista didn't want to play Drax anymore,
right?
So you figured there's no more movies.
And Zoe Saldana was done playing Gamora.
Zoe Saldana was done as Gamora. I didn't think they'd kill her because they already did that once.
Yeah,
we already got that emotional.
But you know, it could have been anybody. Could have been Peter Quill because we didn't know if he was going to come back as Star-Lord.
I think Chris Pratt wants to come back. So I wasn't anticipating him going.
I feel like they had to keep one of the Guardians continuing. Mm-hmm. But again, I was like, Marvel's done a good job at making us think something. But then they're all, and usually it's like the simplest thing that's just going to tell the best story.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going to say. There's a two-pronged thing here of reality that even intrudes on the fantasy. One is writers, whether they should or not, you know, whether they should serve as fans or not, that's up to each writer. But there's this thing in writers who they want to tell something completely original. I will confess, I've told this in other episodes of our podcast, mm-hmm. but any of you who are joining for the first time or haven't listened to those episodes, I'm one of the people who thought in Toy Story 3, when they were all about to get incinerated, I knew they weren't going to get incinerated because that was just, it would make no money after its first weekend, that movie.
Oh, no, and it's a kid's movie.
Everyone would go and see it, and then no one would go and see it.
Yeah.
Oh, you can do that. There's a movie called Old Yeller. There's a movie called Where the Red Fern Grows.
Yeah,
they're aimed at kids.
Back then, you were allowed to be traumatized as a child.
You needed to traumatize
children. That's what I'm saying.
Because of the reality of life.
Narratively, these toys... that they went out together because, like, they all lock arms. That's why everybody started crying. They all locked arms. And in your brain, you're like, no, they're not going to incinerate them. They're not going to incinerate them. But everyone who watches that as an adult, the reason it was traumatizing is because you knew deep in your heart that that would have been a poetic and artistic ending for those characters. You knew that.
But
that's why it was traumatic, because you would know that there's no way they would do that to a kid's movie. As an adult, you knew that. But there was a part of you that also understood that story-wise, like, we can't go on forever. We're toys. We're going to be outgrown. And if as long as we go out together, instead of being, like, sold at a yard sale to five different places, you knew that deep down. I believe that all the adults knew that. They didn't want that to happen, but they were like, at least they went out together. And I thought that would be the most daring kids movie ever.
Just recycle
ever
them
made.
Into something else.
Now I can't wait for Toy Story 5 because Woody's gone and so is Bo Peep.
What are they going to do?
They're split from the group.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean they're not going to be in the movie.
I know. So I'm like, okay, but that's how Woody would have gotten his great send-off. It's like he got to be with his love and now he's happy he's moved on. But then I don't know. This isn't about Toy Story 5.
This is about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right. So we didn't end up having any Guardians get lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we do have the group, as it's known, break up.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
I think is very emotionally fulfilling and sad at the same time.
And if you're going to end that movie, end it with everyone kind of having their big story arc, but ending where they're supposed to be. So Nebula is now a leader instead of feeling like, you know, a second-rate sister. And then you have Rocket, who always insisted that he was the captain, and now he's actually the captain. And Peter, who's... you know, run away his whole life, is now gone home.
By the way, those of you who are listening, every time Natalie hits the desk with her hand, it makes that sound. So just know that making these hand motions
it's
to
excitement.
Emphasize points.
I can't wait to speak in general conference so I can do this.
Okay. All right. We'll spare our listeners' ears any more of that. But we've got a new team of Guardians. Peter Quill's back on Earth, and we get the very final thing, which is the only reason you really need to stay for the second end credit scene, is the big splash a la James Bond. Star-Lord will return. So we'll get him back in something, whether it's his own movie or whether he continues on as part of the Marvel Avengers storyline. Mm-hmm. He is back on Earth, so yes, he could theoretically team up with the Avengers.
That's kind of been the focus, is everyone's talking about Spider-Man being the new leader down on Earth. So
who's talking about Spider-Man being the new leader?
A bunch of nerdy publications talking about having Spider-Man or Daredevil be kind of the core of the Earth superheroes. So I wouldn't be surprised if Peter Quill kind of showed up.
I'm just excited for the Marvel, so I'm not even paying attention to the rest.
Well, and it may end up being Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel's led the Avengers a couple different times in the comics, so these are all things that could happen.
Brie Larson is amazing, so that'd be fantastic.
Natalie doesn't like the Captain Marvel as much as Kellyanne does.
I've never wanted to tell you this, Kellyanne, because you and I are too wonderful of friends, but you don't need to take me to the Marvels pre-screening. It's fine.
But did you watch the Ms. Marvel series on Disney Plus?
Yes, I did.
Did you like it?
No.
Oh, how are we friends? I loved how artistic
and creative and fun and nerdy. Despite our differences,
we're together.
We're still friends.
I know. Because I agree. I did like the nerdiness of it. But for me, I was like,
I think we're going to get into some divisiveness, me and you, in this episode. But we're still friends.
And that's okay. That's part of what we like on Fan Effect, is the idea that you can have different opinions about it, and no one's wrong unless they disagree with me. No, just kidding.
And we've had many disagreements as well.
Nobody's wrong, and that's one of the things that I feel is important to do in fandoms, is to set an example of the fact that you can have differing opinions, but it doesn't have to be divisive differing opinions. I actually think it's interesting to find out why different people say and do different things, or why they like things different than I did. And as long as you can explain it, I'm good with it. I'm good with it even if you can't explain it, but I sure prefer it when you can explain
it. It's always very hard to tell someone to go see a movie that you liked, because you're not sure. It may not be something that, you know,
well,
their vibe.
The fun is discussing it. I mean, come
on. Exactly. That's why I was like, when Kellyanne didn't like Guardians 3, I'm like, this is going to be so much fun.
So we will discuss that after the break as we go in deep on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Fan Effect, brought to you by Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. We've recapped the plot and kind of given some preview of what we were what we're going to discuss here in this segment, as we take a little a much deeper dive into what we saw, what we thought, and where we think Guardians can go after this. Do we want more? I'm sure that a lot of people do. But as long as an IP exists that could potentially make money, Hollywood will use it to make money. So,
but it won't be James Gunn.
No, it will not be James Gunn. He has now moved on to take over the DC Cinematic Universe, and that's a whole different podcast topic.
Oh my gosh, yes.
What he's going to do. But again, don't prejudge. If you like Guardians, you should at least give Gunn a chance to see what he does with the DC Universe. I was not a big fan of the Suicide Squad that he did. I don't even know if I liked it more than the first one. That may be blasphemy to some, but I didn't think the first one was great, but I didn't hate the first Suicide Squad. But the second one, I don't know. I'm trying to think of what I would describe. I just didn't like it. I'm not a fan of Harley Quinn. I'm just not.
It was too bloody, and just how many people can we kill in one movie? That's how it kind of
felt. Yeah, and there were funny
me.
Parts. I mean, I thought King Shark was really funny, but I just was not a big fan. Anyway,
I will not admit as much as I love it because of other reputations I have.
You have other reputations? Well, so Guardians Volume 3. Let me just get what were the things you liked best about Guardians Volume 3, Natalie?
I loved the message within the movie. I thought it was a great way because you're intertwining everyone's sort of imperfections or their flaws and learning that each of them has something to contribute to the team. I loved that message throughout the whole thing. I also loved learning more about Rocket. As hard and dark as it was to watch at some scenes, I thought it was very well done. And even though we didn't get to learn a whole lot about the High Illusionary and his background in the movie, he still was just such a pitiful human being that you hate him from the very beginning and can't wait for the Guardians to eventually take him down. And like I said earlier, I do love what James Gunn did with this movie. It was less about taking down a bad guy, but more about saving a friend. So it was more of a uniting. The Guardians are more united because they wanted to all save Rocket, especially Peter Quill. And I thought that was
great. Well, Gamora didn't.
She sort of helped at the end.
She sort of did. She warmed up.
She almost derailed the whole thing. Okay, what about you, Kellyanne?
Oh, I don't even know how to explain it. You know, one thing I loved about the first two Guardians of the Galaxy was kind of how much of a fun, quirky, different kind of feeling film this was. And even though I know a lot of harsh stuff has happened to them to make, you know, their reality a lot darker, I just felt like it was too dark for me. I also thought it was a little too gruesome at times. Like, some of the animal stuff just hurt my heart too much. And I'm like a little baby biologist. I'm a massage therapist. I've done a lot of anatomy training and cadaver labs and things like that. And I was grossed out about the organic building. So I don't know. There was just enough of some of these things that made me a little too heartbroken or squeamish to enjoy it too much. Although I do respect what they were trying to do with saving a friend and building the individual characters there. I wanted a Guardians of the Galaxy movie with a bit more humor and warmth in it than I feel like we got. So it wasn't that it was bad. I just didn't think it was as good as the expectations as I would have had for previous ones. But I do respect the fact that it was an evolution of the characters and their story arcs and things like that. But maybe if there wasn't, you know, Drax being birthed through a wall, I would have been a little bit more.
That was hilarious. You were talking about not being so funny. That was hilarious.
Oh, it was so gross.
The
and
big
wet
guy getting
sounds.
Stuck in the
Ugh.
Hole. That's always like that's always good for physical comedy.
Although I always enjoy Manta and Drax. Their friendship is like almost won everything else
Since
over for me.
Since the Christmas special, I've loved their.
Oh
I
my
thought
God.
Mantis,
their little side quests. Mantis had the
biggest
best,
improvement
yeah.
from number two to number three was Mantis because
100%.
Oh yeah, I agree.
She was hilarious through the whole thing. I actually thought that this was really funny. Like I really enjoyed. I'll differ with you at least as far as the humor part. For me, I thought it was really funny, and that was one of the things I liked best about it.
Oh, because for me, I thought there were just all those dark moments with Rocket that sometimes. Sorry. I pull my arms. I can't pull my arms. It hurts. that the dark moments with Rocket sometimes when they jump into, you know, to the present time of the Guardians, it was hard for me to laugh at some points because I had just watched something so sad. And I was like, am I allowed to laugh? Because I did not like the way that Rocket was treated in that previous scene.
But the juxtaposition, I think, is supposed to be.
It's to keep it from being too heavy for too long,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Know.
And
maybe
you know,
I'm just
even
too sensitive. Like,
there's a
okay.
double-edged sword of showing them getting along with the other animals is that it makes you feel much sadder when the other animals get, you know, mm-hmm. meet their end at the High Evolutionary's hand. But and also because then when Rocket has to choose between staying with them when he's like right on death's door
yep.
or going back,
you get the Harry Potter
you at least
there.
Understand
yeah.
the King's
the
Cross.
I thought the same thing.
Which did help me feel much better. And Lila was beautiful and wonderful.
Oh, my gosh.
And I love cried. The idea that there's more after.
I bawled so much at mm-hmm. that scene. Mm-hmm. Just
you know,
like,
anytime
it's not
a movie makes you cry, that's a point in its favor. I mean, unless it makes you cry because you're so angry that it's so terrible.
I cried through most of this movie. Kellyanne was like, you cried through most of that
movie. Like, you cried?
Well, the Rocket scenes, of course. But then I love, like, when Mantis, we'll talk about it later, but Mantis is kind of talking about everyone's, even though we think they're quirks, but it's their strong points where Drax, you think, is an idiot, but he's not. She goes, you were born to be a dad. Oh. And Mantis.
Which calls back to his original thing in the first mm-hmm. place was he wanted revenge on Thanos.
And everyone thinks, you know, Mantis is so, you know, airheaded, but it's because, but her strength is really, recognizing the strengths of everyone
else.
It's
empathy and sincerity.
Empathy. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she's sincere. She doesn't lie or make fun of people. I mean, Drax didn't lie because he just wasn't. That's not how his species processes thought. He just says everything. And that it's always been funny. It's funny to us because we do lie and we do hide all of our thoughts. Whereas, so somebody who doesn't do that, it makes us laugh in both being uncomfortable at, I hope I never have to say something like that. Yeah. Or, ah, ha, 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 he's saying the thing that I'm thinking but not saying.
Yeah. But we also get to, because I think Mantis isn't being, you know, controlled by, my gosh, Star-Lord's dad. Forget his name.
Ego.
Ego.
The living planet.
That Ego, she gets to see her, we get to see her personality a lot more in this and in the Christmas special too.
And she's become accepted by a group for who she is. She doesn't have to manipulate as much in order to survive like she has with Ego. So she really has come unto her own there. And she's like one of my favorite people. So
yeah.
Now, I do know that there were a lot of people who were uncomfortable with the – and that was the scuttle around the release of the movie was people were saying like if you – I knew multiple people who said, oh, I could never show this to my daughter or my mom or
– I said that in my review.
Because I just – they would be too sensitive to the animal things. And so then I thought, well, I didn't feel that way. So am I heartless? First question.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe.
Sorry.
But maybe. But the second thing was, is like, okay, so assuming I'm not heartless, I have two dogs that I would never want to see anything bad happen to, or anybody else's dogs or cats or pets for that matter. Why didn't it bother me? Well, partly because as I'm watching this, I understand I'm watching a movie.
Yeah.
I can decide how emotionally invested I want to be or how much I want to let certain emotional things affect me when it comes to stuff like that. Because it's not a documentary. It's not found footage. You know, it's not like based on a true story where, you know, when you watch stuff about real atrocities that humans have committed or when we hear news stories about real atrocities that people commit, then I kind of like to reserve my worry and outrage for that. And then the question in this was, what was its point? Like, this isn't like Saw kind of a thing. You know, as far as the story goes, High Evolutionary is trying to do a thing. I guess in my male mind or my, at least my logical mind, the idea is, well, how did we get a lot of things done? You know, you have to figure out where it is. You know, this could be a metaphor for the beauty products we have that were tested on animals before they figured out ways to get around that. You know, it's nice to be in a position where, and to have the choice to where you can say, I don't want to choose things that are done that way. It's good that we can be in that position. But it also goes to establish this villainy. And when it comes down to it, there were no animals in the movie.
Not true. At all.
True.
You know, and did we feel just as bad about all the humanoid animals that were incinerated when the ship lifted off as we were about the ones that were, you know, the ones that were in the High Evolutionary's cages?
I mean, I'll admit, because, you know.
We have a lot we have to process. We kind of have to choose what.
Well, we also have children in cages we progress as well. So I think just the similarity between.
Thankfully, we didn't see any of them getting experimented on.
Naive, children, animals, and then also children makes it really difficult.
Yeah. So there's some additional philosophical debates that could be had, but that takes the fun out of Guardians. And what we want to talk about is some of the fun stuff. So to me, I liked it more than two. Two, I never really thought was that great. I just didn't.
I never got into it. Yeah.
But three, I thought was better. The stakes weren't universal, but they were universal to the people involved.
Yeah.
I mean, the people who were being experimented
on.
They
weren't
on
universal.
And all
of those it was things. Emotional. And I
right,
think that,
right. But it wasn't like they got to do this or else every living thing in the galaxy
the
is going to die.
The whole galaxy will be destroyed or at least half of them.
It's their friend will be killed.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there's that personal down to an understandable, very one-on-one type level. And that's, to me, those are always the best stories. If it happens to be that they save a greater number of things in the process. But, you know, after 20 to 30 movies where they're saving the galaxy or the world, it's nice to have something a little bit tighter focused, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what it was. And part of it was familiarity with the characters, too.
Yeah.
I mean, these are people we've known now for almost 10 years, and we've seen in at least six movies and a holiday special. So we've connected to them over a long time. Whereas, you know, Shang-Chi or the Eternals or some of these other ones where we were just meeting them, it was hard to feel the full stakes of what it meant. But, you know, how heartbroken were we when after watching Gamora and Peter Quill's relationship go at the end of Endgame. She doesn't know who he is. And you're like, but that's all right. When we get into the Guardians movie, they'll have it all worked out. They'll be dating and friends again. And that didn't even happen through the end of this movie.
No, but they got the endings that they deserve.
Right.
Well, and like Ingmar did find a new family. It wasn't the family we wanted. It was her pirates, whatever they call them, raiders.
The Ravagers.
The Ravagers. She still found family. Everyone got a good ending, basically, an emotionally good ending. So,
and she pulled out Quill's weakness, which is like, why do you have to have me? What have you lost? Like, why does it have to be me? And then that's where Quill realizes, oh, it's because I have family on Earth and I'm too afraid to go back because I thought they pushed me out. Because as a kid, when your grandpa pushes you down the hospital
but
room.
It's also, she's a really hot green alien. Let's not leave that part out of it, too.
Sometimes she's a hot blue
I'm not on that team.
No, that's all right. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm speaking for Peter Quill now
bit. Oh, I know.
But you're right. And she's like, that's not me. That's an alternate future version of me, which is kind of weird to think about because we've watched the original Gamora. And we're used to the other things being the alternate. You're the alternate past version of Gamora. She's not the alternate future version of you.
But then you know, at the end, you realize that she actually does care about Quill. You see that moment where...
Well, I think she realizes there's no reason to hate him. And that she at least validates that he could have feelings for a version of her and that that's not foreign. But who wants to see Nebula and Peter Quill end up together now?
A part of me wanted to.
Right?
Because she has such a great...
Look at me like that.
Yeah, she has a great story arc now, and she's now just such a lovable character. I want her to come
back. Yeah, she went from a hateful, vengeful, destroying thing who only wants to please her father who refuses to show her any affection to being somebody who gives affection and essentially... I mean, she felt more like a leader of the team for most of the movie than Peter did, in part because Peter was drunk.
Peter's drunk and totally messed up.
She's the mayor of nowhere.
She is. All right. So that was where our thoughts on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Let's take another break. And then after we come back from the break, there we go. When we get back from the break... We're going to talk about some of the characters introduced and give you a little bit more information on some of them because you may have seen them in the movie and wondered, should I know more about them? Or they seem somewhat, they seem somewhat prominent. I wonder if there's something that I don't know about them. So we'll give you some background so that when you see the character next time, you'll know just a little bit more and it'll be a more rich experience. All right. So we're talking Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. At this point, we're now going to go a little bit more in depth on some of the new characters who've been introduced. A little bit about their history, both in the comics and then what role they played in the movie. And, you know, what do you need to know about this character? Or what would at least help you to maybe enjoy this character a little bit more next time you see the movie? So why don't we start with... sorry, I have a list here. Why don't we start with the villain? Okay, so we'll start with the High Evolutionary. Then we'll talk about Adam Warlock because he ends up playing a key role in it. But the movie version of Adam Warlock was significantly different than the comic version of Adam Warlock, which is okay because he's not as well-known a character. If you'd have brought in Captain America and had him be like a doofus teenager, then I think it wouldn't have gone over as well as being able to sort of, hey, you don't know anything about Adam Warlock, let's do it this way. Yeah. So, well, let's start with our villain, the High Evolutionary, okay? So in this movie, he's played by Chukwudi Iwuji, which I'm sure I just didn't do his name any justice at all. In this version, he's a long-lived alien geneticist who's the founder and CEO of the intergalactic bioengineering company OrgoCorp. That was the name I was trying to get earlier but couldn't remember. And he wants to make lower life things he considers lower life forms into more evolved versions of that, eventually to the perfection of each species. So these are some of the things he's created. So the evolved animals are indeed called the Ani-men, A-N-I-men.
Sorry.
You've got the Sovereign, who were the gold people that the Guardians laid waste to half their society in the second one. And mostly because Rocket wanted to steal the batteries only because they told him not to.
Yep.
Harper Larry batteries.
And then you've got species 89P13, otherwise known as Rocket Raccoon. Actually, he went on to become Rocket Raccoon. So the only reason he was, we mentioned it earlier, the reason he loved Rocket was because Rocket was the only one that really evolved besides physically and emotionally. And Rocket was the one who was able to solve the evolution of the other animals. But one of the people we saw that little girl who was running in the upside down circle.
The next iteration of awesome genetic
perfection.
There we go.
Now, that little girl is now part of the Guardians. She was one at the end. Her name's Phylavel. We'll talk about her in a sec, too.
Is she in the comics then?
Yes.
Cool.
Actually, for a minute, I thought she was Love from Love and Thunder for a second.
No, I didn't think that.
But I haven't seen that.
She's the right alien.
I didn't realize she was one of the kids from earlier in the movie. That was the thing that I had to look up on the internet afterwards. So at any rate, High Evolutionary just incinerates whatever doesn't work, and he starts over. He feels no attachment to his subjects. When he does that to Rocket's friends, Rocket rips his face apart.
Which is creepy.
I don't know if you caught the RoboCop line that Peter Quill said. It's because the first thing I thought when I saw his face up close was like, oh my gosh, it looks like RoboCop, where they just basically stuck flesh over something and hooked it to some metal.
The nerd in me thought of Star Trek Insurrection.
Oh, yeah. You got them too.
Yeah, that's what
too.
I thought of.
But if you could look up images of RoboCop, and when he has the visor thing off, his face looks exactly like the High Evolutionaries as far as how it's stretched and hooking all the way around.
I was like, Red Skull. For a minute, I was like, Red Skull? Oh, no, that guy's not there.
No, but there was, yeah. So with the High Evolutionary, he has powers. He's apparently evolved himself to where he controls gravity to some extent, whatever it was that he was doing.
I just thought that was the technology in him. So he actually has powers genetically that he's manipulated.
Yeah, I mean, he's manipulated enough genetically. I got the impression that they were powers that I thought they made a mention of it, how he's even beyond what he was. And that's why he's able to like crush Adam Warlock and throw the Guardians around and stuff like that. So at any rate, he ends up destroying Counter-Earth, which he created. And but then he's ultimately defeated by the Guardians. And does he die? They leave him to die. We don't know if he's actually
dead. Of course.
You can't have that he died.
A for sure death. And everybody knows with comics, nobody's ever really dead.
Unless you see them die, they're not really dead.
And even then, it doesn't matter because we've got Gamora.
We've got alternate universes.
Right. And you can bring them in whenever the script calls for
it. Clones after clones after clones.
We actually should just have a whole podcast about how the multiverse may have ruined Marvel.
Or it preserved it forever.
Mm-hmm.
No, but it's worth. I say in lots of episodes because this is how I look at a lot of fan things. Stan Lee once said, I don't remember if it was at FanX or if it was somewhere else. He said to me, when people argue about who could win in a fight, like Hulk or Wolverine, he says the answer is whoever the writer wants to win. He goes, if you want a baby to beat the Hulk, you just have to write away that the baby beats the Hulk. So whether or not a baby could beat the Hulk is irrelevant because if you're the writer, you can have any outcome you want.
That's what's wonderful about imagination.
Exactly.
I agree.
So having the ability to bring back a character from the dead, and, you know, it's a soap opera thing, but there's a reason is because it's an effective, it's at least an emotionally reactive way to tell part of a story. I mean, there's a reason they've done it so much in soap operas. There's a reason that comic characters never stay dead because there's the fun of the reveal of, wait a second, how is that person standing there?
Unless their death really meant something, then I think they should stay dead.
You're right.
We love the mystery of how to explain it away. And
it's
like,
not always, but it's the device. Mm-hmm. Gwen Stacy's dead, for sure dead, in Marvel Universe 616, which is the main one of the comic universe. But she's reappeared she's Gwen in Into the Spider-Verse. There's the point is once a character dies, it allows you to bring them back in a dramatic way or bring back what appears to be them in a dramatic way, because that's often a tool of, oh my gosh, how is it you? Well, it turns out I'm actually her twin sister.
Bum, bum,
dun, dun, dun. And that's it's a fun storytelling device. If it gets overused, it kind of takes the fun out of it and it becomes, you know, the term lazy writing.
Too predictable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like there was a lot of lazy writing in this, in Guardians Volume 3. But the High Evolutionary, in the comics, he's a human from Earth.
Yep.
They kind of hint that maybe he could have been a human from Earth. He hints that he's been to Earth at the very least. obviously, that's where he got the raccoons.
And, like, he's creating a newer version of Ursa.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's some reason for it. Now, in the comics, Counter-Earth existed, but it was a planet that was built that was set exactly on the opposite side of the sun from Earth. So that's why it was never visible.
Okay. The science fiction nerd in me loves that idea.
And so that's why Earth didn't know about Counter-Earth, because it was rotating around the sun at the exact same speed on the opposite side. And this Counter-Earth seemed to be way further away than that. So it doesn't matter. But I thought that was kind of a clever little bit from the comics. The High Evolutionary is a human. He spends time. He's been around since like the 1930s. He becomes a geneticist. He learns some skills from one of the X-Men's villains, Mr. Sinister. Eventually, he starts performing experiments in a place called Wundagore Mountain, which, by the way, was the place where Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness,
Black Widow.
Where Scarlet Witch, that's the mountain she was on top of. It was also where Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch were born. So Wundagore Mountain itself has a whole thing to do with the High Evolutionary. So I don't know if that's going to be sewn together over future Marvel movies. It is worth pointing out for everybody that knows that Kang's going to be the big villain. That's fine. But
we also don't know if Jonathan Majors is going to.
Oh, that's a whole other issue.
If you're worried about that, because if Jonathan Majors has somehow, you know, messed up the ability for them to make the story that they're originally going to make, they pivoted towards Thanos in the process of the 10 years between Iron Man and Infinity War. Like, that wasn't originally going to build necessarily to what it turned into. That's kind of how they originally had each Infinity Stone was going to be kind of its own thing. And, you know, they hinted that Thanos wanted the Infinity Gauntlet. But if you read through the history of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the story writing process, after a few movies, they decided to pivot towards this, and then they started writing everything towards that. So we're only a little bit into this Secret Wars and Kang.
There's so much that could happen in this new phase.
They can fix things if they have to. Maybe it won't turn out to be as good of an idea when it's all said and done as what originally was going to be the case. But the point is, they can still pivot. So there could be more that ties up with the High Evolutionary, with what we saw with Wundagore Mountain, where Scarlet Witch died. So this isn't by any means finished as far as it goes. So, all right. So that's the High Evolutionary. He kind of has a suit of armor similar to Doctor Doom that he built himself. He goes crazy. He's got powers.
Crazy,
he gets superpowers, and then he gets like godlike powers, and then something happens and he reverts, and it's just a series of ups and downs with this guy over the years.
He's just obsessed with perfectionism.
The biggest thing is, I thought he had a cool suit of armor when I read it in the comics. I didn't really understand what they were trying to tell when I was 10, 12, 14 years old.
See, I love that. His toxic trait is making he feels like everything just has to be perfect, and that's his toxic trait. Like the whole stretched out face, like, people think wrinkles are imperfections. So not that he did that to do that, but
because he looked like the Red Skull underneath.
Yeah, I don't blame
literally
him for doing
the Red Skull, the bloody Red Skull.
I just love that he thinks that's what makes him so awful, is that he can't accept flaws whatsoever.
And he becomes.
Gee, I wonder who else is like that in this world. No, it's not. I'm not just referring to any of us three, because none of us, of course, are obsessed with perfection. But.
It's a trait that most
people share. Let's just say it that
Well,
way.
And I think that's one of the things is what makes a good villain is when they have kind of a believable backstory and morals and emphasis. And, like, how many people get so lost in wanting to be perfect that it kind of messes up their life? So this is just an extreme. So,
and I would have loved to have learned why the High Evolutionary is so obsessed with having a perfect civilization. In the movie, like, was there something he experienced when he, I don't know if he was from Earth or wherever, and that he felt like he needed to make that perfect society?
He's got a Dungeons and Dragons.
What ended up happening was he got an A- on one of his papers, and his dad just let him have it that he was not, he was a failure of a son. And so from that moment on, the High Evolutionary was like,
I'm going to create robot raccoons.
I will build a rocket raccoon, and I will experiment on bunnies and make them spider bunnies. Until I've achieved perfection. So it really goes back to the High Evolutionary's dad.
It's always dad issues.
Peter's issues, Peter Quill's issues with his dad. So. No. All right. So, well, that's the High Evolutionary. It doesn't really matter so much his comic history, because most people don't know it that deep. But anyway, those were some things about him. So the things that were most similar, his pursuit of perfection, his creation of the animal people, and then his relationship to Adam Warlock. This was a good way to introduce him, because I didn't realize till I did some studying how closely related those two characters were in the comics over the years.
He goes after, he goes to fight Adam because he wants Adam to. Sorry, we can talk out.
No, that's what I said. So let's move on to Adam Warlock. Now, in the movie, Adam Warlock, they teased him in the Thor: The Dark World, Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one. By the way, he was in the collector's
shop. Yeah, I was wondering what happened there. Yeah.
And then Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, we obviously see that's the post-credit scene. I will call him Adam. And he's played by Will Poulter. Now, when that was cast and was announced, I was like, what the what? I was like, this is like a kind of a... like a golden god, like power levels on the level of Thanos in the comics.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the one who essentially defeats Thanos in the Infinity Gauntlet story.
He's Adam. He's built to defeat the Guardians. Right. In the movies, he is.
Yes, right. Yeah. But he was... whatever, he's a powerful character in the comics, and I was surprised that they picked Will Poulter, who's kind of a comic actor. You first saw him in the Chronicles of Narnia. He was Eustace the Cousin in the last two Narnia movies. And then for a lot of people, he's most famous for the movie with Jennifer Aniston and Will or Jason Sudeikis.
We're the Millers.
Yeah, We're the Millers, where it's not a movie I recommend to a lot of people, but there's a scene where because none of them are related to each other, they're just posing as a family. There's a scene. He's complete nerd and he kind of has a crush on this girl they meet at a campsite. Well, Jennifer Aniston and then the girl who's supposed to be his sister. And I can't think of her name right now, but she's really attractive. But anyway, they're like, well, what are you going to do? And he's, of course, nerdy Eustace type person, only now he's grown into a teenager. He doesn't know what to do. They're like, well, do you know how to kiss? No. So there's a scene where he sits on the couch in the RV that they're taking. And Jennifer Aniston's like, well, let me see what you got. So he makes out with Jennifer Aniston for a sec. And then the girl on the other side says, all right, well, let me see. So he turns around and he makes out with her for a sec. And she's like, okay, you've got some technique. And he sits there for like 3 minutes and he makes out with each of them at the same time because they're teaching him how to kiss. And I thought.
And he's like this awkward teenage guy.
Oh, yeah, so awkward.
And it's so crazy.
And I thought.
And I always think of this awkward teenage guy and then he's going to be Adam.
Right.
But he fit
and
the part
I will
so
say
well.
This. I will say this. Nothing that will happen in Will Poulter's life ever will equal that day of shooting that he had.
You got to write out Jennifer
Millers
Aniston
at the same time with like nothing. Nothing will ever top that. He could never have another role that could top that. But at any rate,
and I
digress.
Just love, I'm like, what's his name? And all I had to do was Google the guy with the eyebrows, and immediately came.
And
up.
So I didn't even think about the eyebrows.
Oh,
but
it's what I always.
He's known for being awkward. So that when they cast him as this powerful being, I thought, what are they doing
and it
here?
Works so well because he's half-baked. He's not quite done yet.
So that's the key. So the Sovereign, he's created by the Sovereign, his mother, Aisha, and then the High Evolutionary apparently was in part of the process, which we didn't know seeing at the end of Volume 2, but I guess maybe they retconned as part of Volume 3. But he comes in like Superman with a cape and everything, and he's got Superman-type powers. Right, a great song playing, the Crazy on You playing at the same point. But what we find out is because they pulled him out of the cocoon early, he didn't develop all the way. So
and he's
they
not perfect.
Right. And he's awkward.
That obsession with perfection.
I told you.
But that's what made him so funny is the awkwardness then was written into the character. But just that one line, if you pulled him out too early and he's kind of like a child, suddenly allowed for him to have the full powers, but to be a kid. And his lines were just awesome, you know, like, well, I don't like how this is making me feel.
He really made the movie. He really did.
He was a key role for sure. So at any rate, he has to watch his mother die in the explosion. He can't save her despite his powers. That's very Superman-ish, by the way. Some people were saying, do you think James Gunn looked at Adam Warlock as Superman and this is part of the reason he wants to write the Superman movie for DCU?
Maybe.
I don't know. Could be. There are lots of Superman parallels with Adam Warlock. And then... at any rate, he's inspired by Groot saying that everybody should have a second chance.
Yeah, even though I am Groot.
He didn't understand
that was a
great line. Yeah, the I am Groot that time just made a huge difference.
I know.
We should do the whole episode. I am Groot. People can just fill in what they. You guys really don't know. You're just making up what he's saying.
So
all
weird.
Right, so that's the movie version of Adam Warlock, and when we finish, he's now part of the Guardians of the Galaxy, led by Rocket and Groot. Now, the comics version of Adam Warlock, and I won't take too long because it really, most of it doesn't matter, but he originally appeared in 1967. He's been around that long.
Oh, wow.
That surprised me. I didn't realize he'd been around that long. He was in the Fantastic Four comics. He's a cosmic being artificially created on Earth, genetically engineered to be perfect. So this is why he links with the High Evolutionary. Eventually, he runs into the High Evolutionary in the comics, and that's who names him Adam Warlock. And then he's eventually recognized as a hero of the universe, protecting it from threats like Thanos, a thing called the Universal Church of Truth, and then his own evil counterpart, Magus. He's also, in the comics, the bearer of the Soul Stone. That was what a lot of people were wondering, was would the Infinity Stones come back? He did have something in his forehead, but they never elaborated on what it was.
They never said it was like the Soul Stone, yeah. They just said like a gem or something.
Well, so first of all, you can't have the Soul Stone in a dude's head in a movie with Gamora. Not after what happened in the Avengers movies. Okay, that wouldn't work very well, but that was kind of what he did. There were times where he stole his own soul from the future into the Soul Stone to prevent some stuff. Like, when you get into cosmic stuff, there weren't a lot of rules or continuity much in Marvel Comics in the 70s for some of that stuff. Certainly not as tight as it was down with like the key superheroes. Yeah. So a whole bunch of weird stuff happens. Eventually, he joins the Guardians of the Galaxy in the comics. And interestingly enough, he has a second version in the early 1990s. This is when I discovered him. And this is kind of how he has been ever since then. He was in part of the Infinity Gauntlet storyline. He was the kind of the being powerful enough to deal with Thanos. And that's why when they introduced Adam in the cocoon at the end of Volume 2, I figured they were going to have him play a role in Infinity War because he's a linchpin in the Infinity Gauntlet story and in the Infinity War comic story. But, you know, Marvel has done a great job of just picking kind of what Star Wars has done with the Legends timeline. They just pick out the stuff from this existing stories that aren't technically canon so that they can fit it into the story that they're creating. This was another example of that. But Adam Warlock in the comics, cosmic. Adam Warlock in the movies, cosmic but funny.
Comedic. Cosmic.
And, you know, maybe we'll get to see Will Poulter again. So
I'm sure.
I kind of want to.
I'm sure they'll bring him back. I mean, you got the Fantastic Four showing up again.
Now, the other key character that was introduced that may play a role going forward is Phyla Vell, is what her name is. That's the little girl who was running in the treadmill that was circular.
And helped save the rest of the kids.
The exercise wheel, but she could go all the way upside down. And I think she was one of the two kids at the table that was playing the game, too.
Yeah.
But at any rate, they save the kids from the High Evolutionary ship, and this kid ends up joining the Guardians. They don't say her name in the movie. It just shows in the credits as Phyla Vell.
Yep.
And I believe James Gunn has done some interviews talking about it, saying, yes, that's Phyla Vell. Now, Phyla Vell, she was played by the actress Kai Zen. This version is the youngster who joins the Guardians. In the comics, though, this character, Phyla Vell, has a huge, huge, rich history that I'm not going to take the time to go at. But she's essentially
still a child, or?
She's the daughter of the original Captain Marvel, who was a Kree soldier. She eventually takes on the roles of, let's see, over the course of her history, she has been known as Quasar, Captain Marvel also, and then a character called Martyr at various points in her history. In the comics, she's lesbian, so that may be something that ends up being introduced later.
Just
so you can say, if it does happen, you can't say that there wasn't some comic base to it. But she's pretty powerful. She took over the role of Quasar in the comics, and then you get these. This is where she may end up playing a role with the Marvels.
Yay!
Because at one point, she had the powers of what are called the Quantum Bands, which are these bracelets. I think the Quantum Bands are what
Ms. Marvel
has.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's when you'll see them swapping places. That was a function that the original Quantum Bands, they were called the Nega Bands at one point, so there's all these different names of it.
Are the Ten Rings involved as the bands, too?
No.
Okay.
The Ten Rings, okay, now they may be in this universe.
Yeah, it seems like it follows the right pattern.
Yeah, and they may be all made of the same material when it's all said and done.
Like, the rings play a huge part, even in Ant-Man, too, but we can talk about that another time.
So we've got Phyla Vell, who may end up being a big thing later, but she's not much in this, but it's the introduction of a character that could end up playing a role going forward.
Yep.
And we'll see. Maybe she does show up in the Marvels later this year. Okay, so that's characters that you may need to know a little bit better, because these are characters that have kind of weight and history in the Marvel Comics universe. We'll see how they end up being used going forward in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm sure the Guardians will somehow make an appearance as we get to the next big Avengers crossover.
At least little cameos.
Because why not?
Fun.
People liked them, and if
they're
there's money
characters
to be made.
Well, I also think because people are kind of experiencing a superhero burnout at the moment, I think we're going to get a little more flexibility in the storytelling where they don't want to appeal to everyone necessarily, but more of uber fans. So I think we are going to get a little bit more cliche, not cliche, niche.
Well, they can't niche.
Niche, thank you. Niche interactions, and we'll see more like interactions of the characters that have we've already fallen in love with, but
niche,
haven't really interacted with each other.
Too.
Niche.
So we'll see. But you're right. Bob Iger of Disney, again, real world creeping in onto everyone's favorite fantasies, has said they're going to slow down some of the production of things.
Very happy about that.
Which I think is a good thing. I think it's a good thing.
I don't think anyone hates that I've talked to.
No, but if they were going to said, we're going to make 3 more Tony Stark Iron Man movies with Robert Downey Jr., I don't think people would be like, no, why don't we wait 10 more years?
No, I would say no completely to that.
You would not.
Yes, I would. I feel like if you do that, you're just ruining Tony's very heroic.
No, because you could put it earlier in the time. If they were going to bring back Tony Stark as Iron Man, you would not complain.
Look what they're doing with Harrison Ford.
I think I would.
Say you would, but on opening day, where will you be?
I mean, I go because I have to see what it's going to be like. Let's be honest. Me as a Marvel fan right now, I go because I want to know what the story is building up to.
Money, it's always money. You're right, Kellyanne. Even though we couldn't hear you rubbing your fingers together like money, we knew that's what you meant.
We're Sharon and Mike, me and Natalie are, so it's a little different
today. We're fun and close today.
All right. Aww. So the Guardians at the end of Volume 3 are Rocket, Groot, Adam Warlock, Kraglin, who finally mastered the art of the whatever
Shotgun,
arrow thing
Kraglin
is. Cosmo, the super dog.
Who is a good dog.
She is a good dog.
She is a good dog.
And then Phyla-Vell.
And that's Phyla the Bell, little Phyla girl. Bell,
yeah, that's
new
the
one.
Little blonde girl. Yeah. And what her powers are specifically, they never defined in the movie. But again, we'll see how things end up. She's young. That would be an obvious way for interacting between her and Kamala Khan. Mm-hmm. So Guardians Volume 4. Will we ever see it? Or would it be a Guardians reboot?
I don't think we'll see a Guardians 4.
Do you think that could be made without James Gunn?
I don't think so.
I don't think it could.
I'd say not as good.
Of course, it could be.
It could be, but not as good.
Okay.
I don't think because so many of the actors don't want to do that, and James Gunn is gone, and we're in a very different phase now with Marvel. I don't think we get a 4, but I think we'll see them interwoven, the Guardians interwoven through other.
So no more solo
courts.
Movies for the team, even with
done.
The current team.
I don't think so. I think you'll just see them pop up because, like you said, I think Phyla-Vell would be great with the Young Avengers. Mm-hmm. Just pop it in there once in a while because that seems to be building up as well.
Right. She was a young Avenger probably.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of
and
young
so,
Avengers.
And Adam Warlock's just been very likable, so he'll come back. And
I want an Adam, even if it's just like a what-if episode. Like,
yeah.
On.
I think it would be difficult. This might be wrong, but it's my opinion. So, but because we're already so close to Rocket, like, he's someone we're familiar with, but sometimes I've noticed, at least with the new series of Marvel shows and movies, if they bring in someone new and they feel like you already like them already, it feels really off. So, like, all these Guardians are pretty much new except for Kraglin and Rocket. And we do sort of, we like Adam Warlock, but, you know, we just got introduced to the Cosmo in the holiday special, but I feel like it'd be too fast to have them be like a new Guardians movie. I think we need to like the new characters a little bit more before we make a new Guardians movie.
Okay.
I think it'd fall flat if it didn't.
I think that's a good opinion. I don't think you're wrong.
Thank you, Andy.
Two things. One is the one thing I didn't mention earlier, which I believe deserves mention, let me rephrase that, mm-hmm. is that one of the things that was the best about this is the thought that between Bradley Cooper's voice and the animators at Marvel,
and Sean Gunn
Disney
as
or
Rocket.
Whoever.
Is that you're going
oh, because no. I was just saying the fact that they created a character who has never existed in physicality. Bradley Cooper was not on set dressed as Rocket. And because he's a completely CG character about whom, you know, who the emotional core of the whole story is about, they'll never get any recognition from the Academy of Motion Picture Science. But they created a character that you legit cried over. Mm-hmm. You legit cried and were heartbroken as to what happened to a fake raccoon who's never physically been around and yet was as real to you as the physical people who were on the screen that acted out, that were in costume and all of those things. Like, that to me deserves some major props. Like,
well, didn't they give Andy Serkis an Oscar nom for
one of the Planet of the Apes movies?
I think they did.
Possibly.
I think they did.
That sounds familiar.
But then you'd have to give the Academy to Sean Gunn, because he was the one that did all the facial expressions and everything for Rocket.
Well, I'm fine with it being shared among things, but it also doesn't work without Bradley Cooper's voice acting.
Oh, I know.
But what I'm saying is, all this together, this collaborative effort has created a character that never existed in physicality, was never on set specifically for people to interact with. When it was, even if it was Sean Gunn, like, hunched down in a green suit trying to do some of Rocket's movements,
yeah,
it still needed Bradley Cooper's voice, which it didn't have on set.
Yeah.
So all this together to create a character that you bond so strongly with, I feel like that deserves recognition that it probably won't get.
Probably not. I don't think it will. There's just too many moving pieces with it.
I think we as fans can show that appreciation, and I think we have for a good part. But, you know, any type of storytelling, there's multiple people in it. Even us sitting here, we have three people. We have someone editing. We have different things. Any type of storytelling, you're going to have multiple people in order to come together. So I think this is just a newer idea that we can have different aspects of a character being portrayed and created with physicality, with computer graphics, with voicing, and come together to one story. I think this is just a progression of storytelling.
Yeah. Well, Sean Gunn did do the voice for Little Rocket.
Little Rocket.
But not Big Rocket.
Oh, Baby Rocket. So he's the one that said
hurts. Yeah, he's the one that goes hurts.
Oh. Yeah. But, like, how beautiful how he picked his own name. Like, oh, there's so many wonderful emotional stuff as well in this. And
yeah.
I don't know.
The name part, and then when Rocket finally says, "I'm Rocket Raccoon," that was the Captain America lifting Mjolnir moment in that movie for me.
Awesome. All right. So last thing before we wrap it up. Every year that passes, we get older. I know that's groundbreaking information, but this is the first time that we have had since 2008. Is the first time in movie history that we've had interconnected movie universes going forward, like where multiple characters in their own movies then crossing over. Comics obviously been doing it forever. First time that we've had it in movies. Well, now we are 15 years in to this experiment. We've had some amazing movies. We've had some characters that we never thought we'd like in a movie. If you'd have told us in 2008 that you're going to like watching a movie about Ant-Man.
Or you're going to cry over a raccoon.
Even Iron Man. Or that you'd cry over a CG raccoon. Mm-hmm. The you from 2007 would have said awesome, but you'd have had a hard time comprehending it or believing it. Well, now here we are 15 years later. And there's no way we can experience again what we experienced the first time through in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We can't, because we've already done that.
Yep.
So now as the movies come out, there's going to be a natural disconnect for each of us as we get older.
Yep.
So here's the question.
Oh, no.
Who should make the decisions about where the series goes? Should they cater to us who continue to get older? Or should they write stuff for our kids who are now coming up through it so that they can have a similar experience? Because, you know, my 10-year-old, we watched all the Marvel movies, but he was born the week before Iron Man 3 came out. Okay.
Wow,
so he missed the whole first two phases or first the whole first phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He's now 10. What should be written for him and his age? And do we as the older group have the right to get mad when they start telling stories for the younger generation? because it feels like that's kind of what we're already sort of trying to do with Marvel's Phase 5 and 6, is we grumble about the ones that aren't the characters we already knew, and we love the ones that are about the ones characters we already knew.
Yeah.
You know,
made my point earlier.
Right. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. We liked it. Part of the reason that we've liked the ones of us who did like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Killian.
Just kidding, Killian. But the reason the ones of us did, I think, is due in no small part to the fact that of our familiarity with the characters. And this is the next step in their evolution, the next phase. If they hadn't changed at all, we'd be grumbling about how, why did they make this movie when none of these characters progressed? Or even if we didn't grumble about that specifically, we at least would have felt something was off. Mm-hmm. As we watched it.
Yeah.
So, and maybe this isn't one you have to answer right now. Maybe this is just something worth pondering going forward, and we do a separate episode about it. But at what point do we have to let go and let the stories be for the younger crowd? And I don't know. I'm 10 years older than Kellyanne, who's like 10 years older than you, Natalie.
She's like three.
Whatever. I'm older than both of you. But
I think there's a natural progression in storytelling that happens, and it is, you do have to capture the next generation. And because that lower generation, that younger generation, was raised on these ideals, that the story does progress. And I think it does need to shift over to the younger one in such a way that you're not alienating the older, but educating them to newer ideas. And I think it's just that progression. Look at the Star Trek universe, how different and revolutionary it was in the 60s to have, you know, Captain Kirk and Uhura. There's a kiss between people of different races. Oh, no. And then you look at some of the stuff Star Trek is coming out now, and it's pushing social boundaries. I think stories need to evolve to not alienate the higher, but to bring in the younger. And I think Marvel's going to have to find that balance.
But can you do both? I mean, is it possible to do both?
You can't please everyone.
Right. And that's what I mean.
You can't. And I don't think you should even try to please everyone. The story is what needs to be carrying forward. And I think we need to see stories that make us a little uncomfortable and challenge our reality and our ideas in order to progress, not just as an individual, but people in a society as a whole. So, you know, and I trust writers who have experience, who have are humble enough to cooperate and work with people. I think writers and creators as a whole, if they're able to have that collaboration and have that gut instinct and imperative to focus on the story, not just the money, then things will get better. You know, I've seen some amazing, graphic, beautiful, produced shows that have terrible stories. And I don't want that. I want the story to lead in everything in life and to bring hope and progression. So I think, yeah, it's going to be more towards the younger generation who grew up on this. And they are going to alienate some grown-ups who don't like some of the stuff. But that's just how it has to be. Story is what carries on.
Okay. Natalie, what you think?
Oh, so I agree with Killian on most things. when it comes to the MCU, I've actually thought about this question too, is because Marvel's already building out, content for teenagers. Ms. Marvel is an example of that. It was successful with teenagers. It was
and
Killian. What does that say about you, Killian?
But
I, like, for me, I watched it. I was like, it wasn't my audience, and that's why it didn't resonate with me very much. And so, like, as a Marvel fan, I'm pretty much only looking forward to things I'm familiar with already. So Echo, I'm excited for, because I know Kingpin's going to be involved somehow, and Daredevil might be in it. And I don't mind having new content. I don't, because it also helps me learn. I'm one of those Marvel fans that sort of jumped in when Iron Man came out, to be honest.
It's okay.
I grew up watching a lot of DC more than mm-hmm. Marvel, but the first Iron Man movie really sucked me into the Marvel universe, and it's changed my life a lot since. I've gotten to do so many fun things because I'm a Marvel fan, and friends with wonderful people who are still in the media when I jump ship. But I think it is important to still, like Kellyanne said, have something that tells a good story that a younger generation can relate to. And I see that a lot, you know, again, with Star Trek and stuff. And I'll make an argument, though, that like with this last season of Picard, like I know I was going to tell you, everyone, I brought my hand out to explain to Andy and Kellyanne as I move my hand around. This is what happens when you have ADHD, you have to move something. But
move it. Just don't hit the desk.
I'm trying. I'm just moving it.
Should I hit it for you?
If you can hit it for me, thank you. We'll just meet Andy. Where you can still keep the old stuff. Like, I love right now showing my kids, like, the old Spider-Man movies. My kids now see Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man. But in my head, I'm like, Tom Holland's going to be your Spider-Man, though, or may not be, because when they get old enough to comprehend, there might be a whole new actor for Spider-Man.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think it's great to have... you can still introduce them to the old stuff, but then for them, they have a whole other universe that's coming for them to look at. And as that progresses, I also do like the idea where you could maybe have like a separate thing for us fans that are older and are already familiar with like Falcon and Winter Soldier, with Loki, with some of the Guardians that may pop up later, like Star-Lord and stuff. And then they also are kind of creating this young Avengers. And this is where maybe, like, this is where young teens are going to see their Avengers come from. So for me, I feel like this is going to be their phase. This is going to be where they have Kate Bishop and they have Miss Marvel and maybe Adam Warlock, we'll see, and Echo, where these are going to be their Avengers that they grow up with, or Defenders, or whoever they're going to turn out to be. And I think that's awesome to see that coming for them. And I'm excited that there is going to be this new level of superheroes. And even though they're not my superheroes, the one I've been watching since 2008, I'm still appreciative that, like, Miss Marvel had great content involved in it. So has like Kate Bishop, Hawkeye. I thought that was a great series too. And as long as it's wholesome and it shares good values and that they're still superheroes and there's people that my kids could look up to, I'm fine with that. And I, you know, hope they continue to do that. Like, with Picard, like, they tried to, I think, with season one and season two, I think they tried to cater too much to a different audience, where the people that were going to watch it are Star Trek fans, that are already fans of Next Generation. So that's why season three worked out so well. But it'll maybe this will turn out more like Star Trek, you know, where I never watched the original series, but I grew up watching Next Generation with my dad. And so I've fallen in love with Captain Picard. But now, that, like Kellyanne said, there's a whole new universe of new Star Trek shows.
You should have seen him when he was the sexiest man alive back in the 90s.
He's still hot for an old man, okay?
Just since you fell in love with him anyway.
But there's, again, I've fallen in love with TNG, and I've loved Strange New Worlds, the new series. And but it's fun to be able to have, like I said, to have this new generation of Marvel fans have their Avengers to look up to, because we already know all the spoilers for all the original films. It's not like I knew that Darth Vader was Luke's father, not because I saw the movie, it's because people talked about it.
It's part of our
but now they have their own Avengers to grow up with, since we know the spoilers. But it'll be fun to, again, my kids now want to watch the Avengers or Civil War, at least, because they know Spider-Man's in Civil War. So.
Nice.
What I love, something you said there, is as long as it has the values within it that the brand represents, because storytelling is going to continue to evolve, but it needs to be entrenched in the values of the original one. And what I mean by that is, you know, if a show is very helpful, it needs to continue to be helpful. If it's socially progressive, it needs to be continually to be socially progressive. You know, we listen to stories to progress as individuals. And I think those values are important to any type of a growth of storytelling and marketing it to which generation comes up next.
Yeah. And one thing, there's a podcast you guys should also listen to. It's called Films to Die With. It's Brett Goldstein. He's Roy Kent on Ted Lasso.
Right.
And he is a writer on Ted Lasso. But he asks people, like, about their favorite movies. And one of the questions
Does he say the F word a lot?
Yeah, he's British. but it's such a good – it's a really fun podcast to listen to. But, yeah, watch the language. But it's
I was just saying that more as a joke, because he sure does a lot on Ted Lasso.
But one of the questions he asked, what is the movie you saw that made you feel seen? And I love that question. And so as you know, progressiveness happens, I like the fact that there's a lot more female superheroes now.
Yep.
I really appreciate that. I was so excited when Wonder Woman came out and my daughter wanted to watch it, but her favorite superhero right now is Captain Marvel. So I have to deal with that, but it's fine. but just saying that I hope that as they continue with the Young Avengers or the New Guardians, or as they're inserting our Avengers into it, and as they start growing out of those positions and leave, that our kids have their superheroes that they can look up to in those movies too, that they can feel like I relate so much to that superhero, and that's why I like that superhero the most. And I think that's why my daughter likes Captain Marvel, because she knows she's a girl.
Right.
Honestly, right now, that's what my daughter likes.
It doesn't matter why you like the superhero. It just matters that you like the superhero.
Yeah.
It can be for 100 different reasons.
Exactly. And I think that I guess making a complete circle back to Guardians 3 is that none of the best, like I said, I love the theme of this movie that no one is perfect and none of the Guardians are perfect. And we've learned that from the first two movies, that they're just like a band of misfits that had to become a family. But because they're not all perfect, they made an amazing team. And I think that's what's great about superhero movies, is that they all have their flaws. Even Captain America has his flaws. You have Iron Man definitely has his flaws, but they always overcome them. But being able, these people growing up realizing they don't have to be perfect, but being able to see someone, a superhero, overcome that imperfection to be the best of themselves, I think is just the most important thing that needs to continue in storytelling, which I think is getting lost a lot, that we tend to start watching a lot of shows now. Like, I mean, I'll be the first to say, like, I really liked Breaking Bad. It was a great show. But you're rooting for someone that's doing something illegal and bad. Where right now, I feel like, besides Disney, plain Disney movies, superhero movies, especially within the Marvel Universe, the main characters are people who are doing good things and are doing the right things. And even though, like I said, they're not perfect and you get to see them stumble, they overcome that. And I just, again, as a parent, I hope that these continue to be made. Even if they don't fit my vibe, my generation, I hope that the next generation gets to be a part of it. So,
well said. As far as I am concerned, it's something that I've been thinking about for a long time. There may come a point where I'm not as interested in watching them anymore, and that just might be the life stage that I'm in. I've always enjoyed them. I like the idea of storytelling. I mean, that's part of the reason that you enjoy a movie, is that you like being told a story. I like, you know, I actually had a friend ask me about this, because this friend doesn't really get superhero and sci-fi movies, doesn't get why people like them so much. She has kids who love them, but she just doesn't connect with them. And so we've had some discussions about, you know, why that is. But you know, it'll be tough. It'll be tough. You know, it's hard to go from being the center of attention, and I say that as the target audience for things. Mm-hmm. Comic books, for so many years, they were considered childish because you grew out of them, and they continued to write the stories for, you know, a 10 or 11-year-old boy, mostly. Mm-hmm. As you get the stories, so Spider-Man never aged. And technically, the reader never aged, because once you hit 15 or 16, you got cars, girls, and I'm talking about the boys that were the target audience. Yeah. Cars, girls, and college, and high school, and social, and all those things. And so then it was back to the next group is 10. Somebody's turning 10 every year. Mm-hmm. And so that was your market for so long. Well, get into the 80s, early into the 90s, and they started to realize... Right, but you started to realize that a lot of the people who grew up on it didn't stop necessarily because they didn't like the characters anymore, or that they didn't care, but maybe they just didn't feel connected to the stories anymore, so they began to want a little bit more mature writing. Mid-2000s, so I collected comics until I was 19, and then I stopped. And then, you know, I kind of kept an eye on what was going on in the comics world. You know, the library had comics that I could read every so often, but I didn't have the money time to pay and collect anymore. But then when Civil War happened in the comics in 2006 or 7, somewhere in there, 6, I happened to read a few issues at the, you know, Spider-Man getting unmasked made national news, like on actual newscasts. It did, because it had never happened. And I was like, what? Spider-Man, I better go read that. And I knew that the library had some issues, and they were easily marked. They were obvious. Any issue that was a Civil War crossover was clearly marked, so you could go to the comic rack at the library and find the ones that were relevant, like, immediately.
Death of Superman, same thing. Like, it right. became a social phenomenon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I, by the way, have those issues. I have one that's still unopened.
Do you have the armband of grieving?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I bought two of them at the day back in 92. But that storyline, I'm reading it in the library. And it was so good. And but because it spoke to all the years of history that I'd put in, all these things that were happening, they didn't sit down and explain what the impact was. I knew what the impact was just by reading what was happening. Like, oh, my gosh, Spider-Man unmasked. How's that going to go over for his employer who's, you know, he's been essentially duping for all these years? How's that going to go over? You know, the obvious thing was now all the bad guys are going to know where to attack. But it was other things like. All this stuff happened, and it was just fascinating for me to read. And so that got me buying comics again for about 2 years. So I have mm-hmm. two collections. I have the up to 1995, and then I have 2006 to 2008. And then I ran out of money again, and I had kids, and I had to stop.
Yeah.
And so there was a market then for writing these stories with these characters for older. And that seems to be where they've continued to go. Realizing that the people with the money now are the adults, not necessarily the kids. And with the cost and everything.
And adults want to recapture, you know, the childhood.
These comics were 35 to 75 cents to a buck 25 when I was growing up. And now they're like $5 a book. And it's a lot or more. I haven't bought any in a while, but it might be more than five. But it's around.
More than that, yeah.
It's somewhere between there. But and then you've got digital comics that have come up. So
subscriptions.
You've got this. I mean, I see it somewhat in radio and things too. You know, you've got an age who's connected to it and you stay with them, but you got to figure out how to get the next group in at the same time.
That's
and
what
that's
we do.
The challenge. So I'm there may come a day where I just have to say, like, darn it, I wish I just felt a connection to these the way I used to. I think I will, because I'm pretty immature emotionally in a lot of ways. And so that this will always connect with me. But I like to watch it with my kids now, sometimes just to kind of have their experience at the same time.
Same.
Talking about new audiences, Andy, I wonder if you can talk a little bit real quick about a new audience that you're going to start to really be involved with soon.
Oh, that's a subject for another day.
No, just let people know.
Well, starting in July, I'm going to be the host of the movie show on KSL Radio in Salt Lake. Thank you. And so... There will be a different perspective. You know, the longtime host has been doing it for 36 mm-hmm. years of the movie show. And the co-host, Doug Wright's the longtime host. Steve Sales is staying on as co-host with me. So there'll be some continuity. And then hopefully, you know, I'll bring a little bit of a different. I certainly am going to bring sort of the nerd fandom aspect to the show more so than it has right now. But it's a thing where hoping that we keep getting listeners as we keep going. People who've listened to the show for a long time, I hope they stay. And I hope we get a bunch of people who haven't listened to the show in a while or who never have listened to the show because they just don't listen to radio that much. But you'll be working in the digital a little bit. I'm sure Fan Effect will be mentioned on the show.
We got to get a little more deeper dives than for on the podcast versus
right,
the radio.
Right, because we don't have time on the radio to do what we've done here, which is we're now at the 90-minute mark. So.
But that's
okay. Hopefully it's been worth everybody's time to listen up. Appreciate you listening. If you've joined us via podcast or via a link on social media, or if somebody texted you or somebody said, hey, check this out, or if you just heard our commercial on KSL News Radio that plays.
My gosh, you guys revealed to the world I don't like Star Wars or Harry Potter fans.
I think maybe we'll rewrite that. But
no, that's fine.
But
no one knows
this
mean, but now they do.
The idea is... hopefully we'll see a lot more of those things and we hope that you'll keep listening. We've got great episodes, as we try to get more content on here, we hope you'll keep listening.
I can't wait to talk Little Mermaid soon.
That's coming up next.
Spider-Verse.
It's Spider-Verse. We got a whole lot. Mission Impossible, Indiana Jones, a whole bunch of stuff this summer.
Haunted Mansion.
Sure.
Me and Kelly, I don't want to talk about
it. We'll talk about it.
All right. But
provost or someone will come.
Again, this podcast sponsored by Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters. We're grateful for their support to help make it possible. Natalie, thank you for joining us. We're glad you're okay and that you're on the mend.
Thanks, guys.
That maybe next time you're on, you won't even have a lisp anymore because I'll have gotten everything fixed.
Hopefully.
But you know what? Nobody noticed it this time.
I notice it, but yeah, I don't want to be pessimistic, but I may be this way for till Christmas time. So
well,
but I'm hoping so. This list may be here to stay for a bit.
That's okay,
but that's okay because it's cute.
Awesome. Well, we're grateful that you're with us, and we'll have you on again soon. And for Kellyanne Halverson, I'm Andy Farnsworth. Thanks for listening to Fan Effect.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.